To introduce Professor Divakaracharya, our new Spalding Professor of Indian Religion and Ethics, because Divakar was in a previous incarnation, he was a Shiv Dasani visiting fellow at the center. So we were thrilled that he ended up in this position, and he now has become a member of our Board of Governors, representing the Humanities Division, which is, again, very good for us. And we couldn't have had better title that the Spalding Professor, his first talk is about dolphins. Couldn't get better than that. but over to you. It's the celestial dolphin and Upanishadic puzzle and the first incarnation of Vishnu. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Savanakji, for your kind words. And I'm actually thrilled and very happy to have your company here. So many of my colleagues, my senior teachers, gurus, and gurukalpas. I hope during my lecture you will be able to amuse yourself. So today I'm going to talk about, actually just about the dolphin. The dolphin in this world as well as in the heavenly waters. At one point, this dolphin was quite important, but gradually it was forgotten or generalized. So I will be relating all this in this lecture. And also I will be reading some passages from Jaiminiya Brahmana, Satpatha Brahmana, Taittiriya Aranyaka. There are other, like in Puranic text also, so I will not be able to cover everything. But I will try to read some of these, and then I will try to solve one puzzle in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So let me begin with the myth of the rescue of Vaivashvata Manu in the Satapatha Brahmana. So there is translation that story. I am not going to read that. I am going to summarize that. Yeah, a myth of an extraordinary fish there. So in the beginning, it is told as baby fish. So appears in the part. I think the first book of Satapatha Brahmana, and maybe many of you know this story. This is quite popular, and it continues. It is found in Puranic literature also, but a little bit modified, extended, and so on. So basically, this myth tells about Vaivashvata Manu's chance discovery of an extraordinary baby fish that asked him to rear it at first in a big jar and then in a furrow, and when it has outgrown that furrow, to take it down to some a sea or vast accumulation of water. I'm trying to be pedantic. Some udra, no? Literally means accumulation of water. It is not necessarily a sea, but we can say it is a sea. In return, it promises to save him from a flood. It predicts we will carry away all creatures. And then when reared, it gradually becomes bigger and bigger and finally becomes a jhasa. So the word used there is jhasa, and then it is described there as the strongest of fishes. I am interpreting this jhasa as translating it as a dolphin, and I will argue why I am doing that. So following its instructions, Manu releases it finally into a vast expanse of water. At the time of the flood, it predicted, the fish predicted, it really comes and leads Manu's ship to safety to the foothills of the mountains in the north. After the flood, all of mankind is carried away except Manu, and he has to create the human world anew, at least the human world. After the savior dolphin returns, lonely Manu offers a sacrifice, practices tapas, and obtains the essence of oblation in the form of a lady called Ida. On her, he eventually begets all creatures. Here, maybe I would like to just mention that as it has been shown in his name is Magnon, the Italian scholar Paolo Magnon. He published an article in 2001, and actually Gonda had already written about it in 1978, arguing for the independence of this myth and suggesting that accept the basic ideas, this Satapatha Brahmana myth is fundamentally different from Sumero-Akkadian, this deluge myth. Anyway, that is not my main task today. But anyway, in Sumero-Akkadian deluge myth, the deluge is caused by the supreme god to punish humans. And in that flood, minor gods also have to suffer. But in Manu's myth, such a motive is absent. And in Satapatha Brahmana story, Manu is not bothered to secure goods and beings for the future world either. The Satapatha Brahmana simply records that in a flood, a dolphin saves a certain human being and he creates the human world anew in the post-deluge time. Thus, the focus and highlight of this myth appears to be the rescue of a man by a dolphin that once a baby fish was saved and reared by him. So this is in a way more folklorist than anything with extra intention. As I said, I identify this Jasa as a dolphin. Maybe we need some comment or some discussion. In fact, already in 75, Professor Bernhard Kuelber had suggested that the word Jasa means the river dolphin, the Gangetic dolphin. But scholars have nonetheless consistently translated even after that article. He actually made this comment incidentally in some other article, so probably people didn't pay much attention. So therefore, I would like to give some more evidence to substantiate Professor Kuelber's proposal. So Satapatha Brahmana myth states that the fish eventually become a jasa, the strongest of fishes, you know, and also leaves sufficient clues to identify it as a dolphin. The text associates it with the sea or any large body of water. It is an aquatic animal of good size, strength, and intelligence, as the description goes. The myth depicts the fish as having an elongated snout, a sringa. And in different contexts, sringa can be translated differently. It is not necessarily to be a horn. And it is a myth, and it is not necessary that we have to stick to the horn. So as the text states, Manu tied his ship to the elongated snout of the fish, and swimming upstream, this fish took him to the northern mountains. As we gather all these points, the description of Manu's jasa, fish, appears as follows. It is an aquatic animal that is very powerful. It can swim very fast upstream and has an elongated snout. I have to give some other information, and I will continue. I will come back to my argument why it is dolphin. Just let me tell you that this original myth of Satapatha Brahmana is found also in Mahabharata, Vishnu Dharmottara, Matsya Purana, Vishnu Purana, and also in Bhagavata, in different length. So in the Mahabharata, in the Satapatha Brahmana, this fish is not identified as any divine being or any god, but in Mahabharata, it is identified as the creator god Brahma Prajapati, not yet Narayana, in disguise. But in Vishnu Purana, afterward Vishnu Purana, Matsya Purana, Vishnu Dharmottara, Bhagavata, and a number of other Puranic or literary texts, it is described as an incarnation of Vishnu, actually the first incarnation of Vishnu, Matsya. Soon forgotten is the Mahabharata identification of the savior fish as Brahman or Brahma, while its identification as Vishnu continues in later narratives also. Clearly, by the time of Vishnu Purana and other Puranas, Brahmanism was waning and Vaishnavism was thriving, and this identification, one identification was dropped and another was adopted. In any case, by the middle of the 6th century, the fish has been already regarded as the first or the foremost incarnation of Vishnu. This comes from Madhyamaka Hridaya of Bhavya. So Bhavya argues and he says that this supermundane body and then the incarnated body, and then he mentions that Matsyadi Murti. So by that time it is standardized and already known. In these accounts too, the dolphin-like characterization of the fish remains intact. Of our interest here particularly is the characterization of this fish, the incarnation of Vishnu, in the Jayottara Tantra. Actually, this is the Ur text of Jayakhya I am editing, so and the same account is there in Jayakhya also. Actually, this was the point where I started to dig up, so I started to investigate. So these two texts are the same text, actually extended. It describes the first incarnation of Vishnu as Nimilitaksha, the fish with closed eyes. So why? And then I started to investigate and found that the river dolphin is virtually blind, that is present in the Ganges. And actually the Professor Kolber's proposal I found very late. So after I already had concluded it should be the river dolphin, and then I was happily surprised that he had suggested, not in this context but in other context, from a literary context and then descriptions, he was suggesting that Jasa is river dolphin. So anyway, and then in Indian subcontinent, at least one species of this blind dolphin is present not only in the Ganges but also in Brahmaputra, gradually now dying out, endangered, but still also in Indus, the Sindhu River. These were the reasons I thought I should systematically translate Chasa as the river dolphin or dolphin. But not only that, I have one more interesting evidence. In various roles and in situations, dolphin is associated with many deities. You may know that, like, not only Vishnu's incarnation, in case of Pradyumna or Kamadeva, so it is in the banner of Pradyumna and the love god. The same way, it is the vehicle of Varuna, when Varuna is depicted. It is also the vehicle of Ganges, the river Ganges, when Ganges is depicted. And actually, in all these depictions, it is shown with some sort of short legs, but with elongated snout, cord. So that tells that they had forgotten what it is really, but whenever they had to depict Chasa or Makara, they still had this continuity of dolphin and the dolphin's snout. But even more interesting thing is, interesting thing comes from, again, now and again I relate to Kathmandu or Nepal, but Kathmandu Valley is a kind of museum, alive museum, so you find many things there. So there, we still use we have evidence from maybe 2nd, 3rd century down to 19th century, there are these stone water conduits, and then there the water falls from the mouth of, now I say dolphin, because you see this cord snout, snout is there, here, so this thing here, rolled and cord. This image is not so nice. I put it first because it is a bit older. Here, this is with metal cover, but now with poetical artistic imagination, a goat is coming out from the mouth of, I would say, dolphin. Again, you see that this is in literature also, like Bana talks about Makara Bhaktra Patati. So here, this thing cannot be associated with a crocodile. Let me tell that originally Jasa Makara was a dolphin, now I am proposing, but at one point it goes into two different directions. Somehow they lose the contact with the dolphins, and then In one direction it develops as a crocodile, in another direction it is generalized as fish. Maybe if time remains, I will also talk a little bit more about what is Makara, but for the time being maybe I have to move. More interesting is, like I'm just showing you some of these, more interesting is this inscription on one of these water conduits, which reads, Udyotakakhe satatam manogye suralaya syadvani sadbihare hareva dhareya mati prasanna jhasasya bhaktrat patati virajate. It is interesting. In this monastery called Udyotaka, so Udyotakakhe Sadvihare, which is throughout beautiful or always beautiful, Satatam Manogye, Sura Laya Shyadvani, and which lies on the way to the house of gods. This I'm not sure what it actually means. So figuratively, they are depicting that area as a way to heaven, or there was some temple. Sura Laya can be a temple. Suralaya Shadvani Sadvihare Hareva Dhareya Mati Prasanna. Hara can be used also in feminine. No? So here it is used in feminine. So this extremely clear stream of water, Ati Prasanna Iyam Dhara, Hara Iva. No? So that looks spectacular, like a string of pearl. That falls, Patati Virajate. That shines beautifully as it falls from the mouth of a dolphin. So this depiction, 5th century inscription, is calling it Jasa, and then we have these depictions. So more or less I say that now we should not have any inhibition to accept Jasa as a dolphin. Okay, so now, you see here, this is 19th century, so poets and artists, they are not within any control. No? So now he makes this curled snout in the form of a bird's beak. Okay. One more thing, which maybe, I don't know how much you like, me relating this thing to realia. When I was fascinated by this idea, dolphin leading humans and dolphin helping humans, I googled, I searched, and it is still online, you can find. I found an account from 2004 tsunami. So a group of scuba drivers, the text is there, so I just copied from some website. They were there when the earthquake happened. They had no idea. They were somewhere in the sea, and then they were ready to dive. Then they saw that there was some movement of water, but they saw that a few dolphins, you know, one after the other, they appear and they started to jump in front of them, and they realized that probably they are signaling something. And then the leader said, "Let's follow," and then they followed, and then actually they were saved. So dolphin led them to some island. So when they returned back to the land, they found that everything is devastated. Many people have died, and then there is havoc. No? So they were actually saved by dolphin. So this fits in Manu's story, I thought. And then I was checking further. Sorry, no? So that I have not put it there, but. I read that according to the geologists, in the Indus Valley area, there was actually tsunami, so around 1000 BC. And if we believe, so like the Satapatha Brahmana's date is like from 900 to 700, 600, so somehow that idea also fits, but I'm not claiming. It can be any kind of flood, or it can be just a small flood in a village. To form a myth, you don't need a big story, no? A big event. So it is possible that who is now called Manu was just a person. So in a small community or in this Indus Delta, when there was a big flood or the tsunami, so actually it happened. It's possible, because otherwise in other earlier Vedic material, we don't have any evidence of the flood story. So we have this flood story in the Satapatha Brahmana, And then particularly the focus is on this fish and the dolphin. So that's why there is something. So at least from here we can harvest that dolphins, they knew, the Vedic people, the ancient people, they knew that dolphins can help human beings, and they knew of some such incidents, definitely. Okay, so now let me go back to the texts. Actually, yeah, this idea can be confirmed from another text, story that comes from Jaiminiya Brahmana. So this now, again, so this confirms this relation of dolphins and humans, but this time there is divine intervention. But if you remove that divine intervention, you will see that dolphins also need humans. Okay, so this part maybe I would read, because this is important for this idea of celestial dolphin. But this is the very basic and early story, and one story. There are other stories. One among those chants sung in the tradition of the Samaveda, I am translating from the Jaiminiya Brahmana, is the Sarkara Saman. So and it is named after the dolphin who is called Sarkara. So all beings praised Indra. Sarkara, the dolphin, did not wish to praise Indra. Indra said to him, "Praise me." He answered, the dolphin answered, "I will not praise you. I roam in a vast expanse of water, in the waters, diving deep down immersed. With this much to do, how could I praise you?" In response, Parjanya, who is ally of Indra, by means of heavy rain, he forced the dolphin to swim upstream through the wastes. So he showed him nothing but water everywhere, but dried him up completely with the north wind. Lying there completely dried up, he realized, "Since I have thus got into this state, it must be Indra who has done this to me." He said, "Well, I shall indeed praise Indra. Being praised, he will definitely make me float downstream again to a vast expanse of water." He visualized that mantra, which is later named after him, the Sarkara chant, and praised him with it. "Who has in the past brought for us one after the other good things here? Him, Indra, I shall praise on your behalf, O friends, for help." So actually he is needing help. Probably it is also possible, if it is actually in the context of dolphin, probably other dolphins are also there. It is not only one dolphin. Anyway, the text is talking about one particular dolphin. Then, to him Indra said, "What do you want to get by praising me? Please float me downstream to that same vast expanse of water, of the sea." So he said, that dolphin said, Parjanya floated him downstream with rain again to the same vast expanse of water. I am skipping a few lines, they have maybe more related to rituals. By means of that very mantra, he, namely the Sarkara, the dolphin, ascended to the world of heaven. He is the Sarkara constellation that rises there in the sky, probably he is pointing there, no? And it is the celestial form of that dolphin, who thus knows, attains the celestial world. Now, so this Sarkara chant is related to the 12-day-long sacrifice called Dwadasaha, and then 8th, 9th, and 10th days are related to this particular chant. So these rites, these three days rites are called Chandoma rites. So Chandoma rites represent a vast expanse of water. The dolphin is in fact able to take one across a vast expanse of water. So this is observation from realia, no? So from the real world. That there in the text is the Sarkara chant for this very purpose of crossing the vast expanse of water over there in the heaven. So the dolphin lives here in the real world, in the real water, no? So across the real water. So the celestial dolphin leads one across the heavenly waters. This last paragraph is important, not right now, but it will be important later. Let me read this for interpretation of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. So as Sarkara, the dolphin, saw this chant, therefore it is called Sarkara. So he repeats that idea again. And now he cites another verse from another chant. Friends, sit down closely as he is being purified, sing forth for him. So, who is purified? This is Soma, the dream. No? So, this Dvadasaha is related to the Soma. As this much is sung, the Chandoma rites become inclined forward. They attain the very form of the initial ritual. That day is the initial one. So, the first day they chant this song. So, like a child, the second part of the same chant says, like a child, for the sake of excellence, attend to him. As this much is sung, the latter half of the chant, they take the very form of cattle, and the cattle surely have youngling. Just I want to point that, you know, the Sanskrit word used there for the dolphin is not jasa, but shimshumara. There is the variation of shimshumara and shishumara. And here, there is a play on word and play on this double meaning also. No? So, shishu means the child, and then shishumara, perhaps according to Luders, and now Parpola is also citing it again, there is a possibility that mara in shishumara is shortening of makara. Actually, makara is probably is one species of dolphin or the sea dolphin, and shimshumara, we have cognate words in other Indian languages also, no? Shons, shushu, in Pali also we have shushuka, shushumara. So probably there was another word which is Sanskritized as shishu, and then somehow they are playing on this word shishu. So probably shishumara means this is the shishu variety or one variety or one species of makara. So Luders and then Parpola's idea is that makara becomes ma'ara, prakritized, no? Ma'ara, mayara, ma'ara, and then becomes ma'ara. So it can be originally shishu makara, shishu variety of makara. Just possible. So anyway, in this text, there is some play on this shishu. So shishu appears in the chant. Who is chanting is shishu. Shishumara, and then they are relating that by the force of this magical power of this chant, there is reproduction of youngling. So here they are relating it with the cattle. No? So cattle was very important at that period, at that in that society. So they were depending on cattle raising and agriculture, probably more on cattle raising. So they somehow want to associate this production of young animals. Anyway, so this is one description of celestial dolphin. It tells that how this dolphin in this world was transposed there in the heaven. And then where it is and how it is, for that we have to go to another text. That is Taittiriya Aranyaka. And this is quite important and helping us to understand this episode even better. So in Taittiriya Aranyaka 2.19, there is a text passage which, according to the tradition, according to the commentatorial tradition, belongs to Brahmopasthana. You probably have heard about Suryopasthana. The Brahmins, they have to do upasthana, they have to attend to the rising sun. The same way, at one point, there was this attending to the Shishumara, this heavenly constellation in the form of the dolphin. Actually, that is now in our modern understanding, that is the Draco, which was once the constellation which housed older pole star, that was Thuban, until 1900 BC. So our text, I should not claim, I am not claiming that our texts are that old, but they conserve some older tradition. So when they had observed and they started this tradition, the Thuban was seen as the pole star. So that description is also there in this Taittiriya Aranyaka passage. and then it has continued in other Puranic description also. Let us read this thing. No? So I have given you there the Sanskrit text also. Bhuhu prapadde, bhuvaha prapadde, swaha prapadde, bhur bhuvashwaha prapadde, brahma prapadde, brahma kosham prapadde, amritam prapadde, amrita kosham prapadde. So then now he cites a metrical text. No? So chaturjalam brahma kosham. There is a typo. Yam mrityur nava pashyati. Tam prapadde. Devan prapadde, Devapuram prapadde. Again, there is a bit modified citation from Atharva Veda. Paribrito, baribrito, brahmana, barmanaham, tejasa, kashyapasya. So, this is a veneration to Brahman. No? So, Brahmopasthana. Yasmai namah tachiraha, dharmo murdhanam, brahma uttara hanur, yajyo adhara, vishnu ridayam, sambatsarah prajananam, Ashvinau purvapadau, atrir madhyam, mitra varunau aparapadau, agnihi putchasya prathamam kandam, tata indra, tata prajapati, avayam chaturtham. Sava esha dibya sakvaraha shishumaraha. So actually, earlier it was sarkara, there is just orthographical variation. Now it is sakvara, it is read as sakvara. When it comes to Purana, it becomes, because they do not understand what is the meaning of sakvara, they makes it sakshyaraha, together with akshara, because Brahma is concerned. So anyway, ya evam veda apa punar mrityum jayati, probably I should put punar mrityum together. Jayati swargam lokam, nadhvani pramiyate, nagnav pramiyate, napsu pramiyate, nanapatyah pramiyate, lagvanno bhavati. Dhruvastvamasi, dhruvasyakshitam asi, tvam bhutanam adhipatir asi, tvam bhutanam shreshtosi, tvam bhutanam tvam bhutani upari upari avartante, namaste, namah sarvamte, namo namah, shishukumaraya namah. Again, there is some modification because of misunderstanding. Shishumara, somebody makes it Shishukumara. You know that Taittiriya Aranyaka is spread in the south. Maybe Kumara is important for them more than Shishumara. Anyway, so let me translate fast. So I resort to the earth. Maybe, I think it is Akuza somehow. We have to. Bhuhu is Bhyarriti, but Prapadde is there. Later we have accusative, so that's why I still say, I'm trying to translate. Or we just say, he invokes the earth, and then I resort to that way. So I resort to the firmament, I resort to the heavens, I resort to the earth, firmament, and heavens, I resort to Brahman, I resort to the veil or armor of Brahman, I resort to immortality, I resort to the veil of or the armor of immortality. Then the quotation, the armor or veil of Brahman made of four nets, chaturjalam, or four layers of nets, which death cannot see. I resort to that veil or that armor. I resort to the gods. I resort to the city of gods, encircled, enveloped by Brahman, by the armor, now Brahman uses. I am by the brilliance of Kashyapa. That is the head. The text has some problem there, but I have no time to discuss. But it is a kind of patchwork, it looks. He's quoting bits from here and there. So that is its head to which I pay obeisance. So I thought maybe it is first interpretation. We have Yasmai Nama Tatshiraha. Then dharma inhabits its forehead. There is accusative murdhanam. So I am supplying like asritaha from Puranic parallel from this passage. So Brahman is its upper jaw. Sacrifice is the lower. Vishnu is its heart. Sambatsara the genitals. Aswin twins are its frontal legs. Atri is the middle trunk. Mitra and Varuna are the other two legs, aparapadav. Agni is the first section of the tail, then Indra, then Prajapati, and Abhaya is the fourth. this is the celestial Sakwara dolphin over there. Whoever knows it in this way, he will keep re-death off and then win the world of heaven. He does not die on the way. He doesn't die in fire. He doesn't die in waters. He doesn't die without having any children, no progeny. And he obtains food very easily. This Laghu Anno Bhavati. You are Dhruva, or the constant. You are Dhruva's abode. You are the overlord of all beings. You are the most excellent. Around you, all beings rotate. Obeisance to you. All this is yours. Obeisance again and again to the dolphin. So, it appears that, as I already said, that the Taittiriya Aranyaka has borrowed bits and pieces from different, maybe older texts to compose this or have this passage. There are some textual problems, so I am not going to deal, but maybe I have to skip, don't have enough time. Also there is this possibility that by this time, this Shishumara, people have started to see already as a crocodile, because this passage is talking about Apara Padau and Purva Padau. In case of dolphin, they have two fins, they don't have hinge fins. There is transformation, no? Or metamorphosis of the dolphin. But putting this aside, let me just mention that Hiranyakeshi Griya Sutra tells us more about the dolphin. So there is one passage which tells that after the newly married wife enters the husband's home, the husband shows her Dhruva and Arundhati. Now, the pole star has this identification or fixed name as Dhruva. Earlier, it is not there. Like in this passage, we read the Taittiriya Aranyaka. There is Abhaya. Somehow, Abhaya can be related to Dhruva. In Dhruva's story, there is mention of Abhaya and this idea of Abhaya, fearless state after one has achieved Brahmahood, etc., is there. But in later times, Dhruva is the name of the pole star. Anyway, so the husband shows the newly married wife, Dhruva and Arundhati, and they venerate the two stars, one after the other, reciting two stanzas praising Dhruva, the constant pole star, as Brahman, and as Achyuta, the immovable. No? So Achyuta later is the name of Vishnu, but still here, I think the literal meaning still works. Together with Prajapati, as his foremost son, and Prayastrimsa gods as other sons, and Angirasas as grandsons. So there is seems there was this myth was a bit more extensive, and then we don't have the full myth. But Brahman is addressed here as the middle, Madhya, the hitching post, Methi, Methi, actually. The one belonging to the nave, Nabhya, and also as the cord, Tanti. So there is another depiction, another idea. So already we have this in Hiranyakeshi Griya Sutra, but some more information we actually find in some other Puranas. And actually this Taittiriya Aranyaka, description of Shishumara Chakra also is found in Brahmanda Purana and Vayu Purana. These are the older Puranas, as old as perhaps Mahabharata. And actually in Nepal, I have found one 12th century anthology of good sayings from Mahabharata, arranged in Prakaranas, and that manuscript is 12th century. And in that, he is called, his name. So I don't know who he is, Samdeva. Anyway, at the moment, I don't remember the name of the author. But he says that, except the connecting verses, he has written nothing in this anthology. He has borrowed everything from the Mahabharata. But I have found like 5% to 10% verses not in the critical edition or the supplement of Mahabharata, but I have found those verses in Brahmanda Purana and Vayu Purana. So that also confirms the old data of Brahmanda and Vayu. And this passage is there in that anthology also. So I have emended in at some places from that 12th century manuscript. So anyway, this is somehow the versified form of Taittiriya episode. So I am not going to read and translate this. But one interesting, maybe the second line and the third line is important. So it gives phalasruti. So what is the reward of doing Brahmopasthana? It says, yad anha kurute papam drishtvatan nishimuchyate. When you see this Brahman, or now maybe, yeah, I think still Brahman, or Narayana, anyway. So this heavenly dolphin, so whatever you have done, wrong things in daytime, all that is wiped off by seeing this heavenly dolphin at the dusk. So immediately after this description in the these two Puranas, Brahmanda Purana and Vayu Purana, there are a few verses that tell us more about the celestial dolphin. And then these verses depicted as the name of constellation. So now we can relate this information with the information we got from Hiranyakeshi. The dolphin makes all celestial bodies move as it moves. It is kind of rotating and whirling dolphin, because all of them are bound to this, bound to the tail of this dolphin, with the reins of the cosmic Pravaha wind, Bata Rasmi of Pravaha Vayu. And actually this idea you find also in Surya Siddhanta, in astronomical Siddhanta text. So there was this idea that the constellation there, which is in the form of dolphin, now later known as Draco, and Thuban, the third star in the tail of that dolphin, was the best pole star, according to the now modern scientists also. It was exactly at the center, like the present-day pole star is not that much in the center. It is maybe a few degrees away. And this Thuban was a pole star for a long time, probably almost for 1,000 years, like from 2800 BC till 1900 BC. So at one point, so this idea is quite old, and then they thought that this attached to this tail are all the heavenly bodies, and they go around because this Brahman. So that's why this is regarded as Brahman, very important, the ultimate reality. This is the hitching post. So this dolphin is bound to a hitching, kind of hitching post, and then all other heavenly bodies are rotating when it rotates. So that kind of idea is there. Then, now, yeah, if my finger works, yeah, actually, this is the Draco, no? The tail of Draco. So the here is the Thuban, and then the face is on this side. For some other information later, please pay attention also to this constellation. This is Ursa Major. Now ignore this closing line in this depiction. If you ignore this line, it looks like upside down a ball, no? So with a handle. So these are the seven sages. So Ursa Major. And one more thing here, this second from the tail, this is now, yeah, there is extra small dot there. It is not one star, there are two stars. The small one is regarded as the wife of seven sages. No? In later traditions, she is regarded as Arundhati, and I was mentioning Arundhati and Dhruva. No? So I think even the Hiranyakeshi is still thinking about this pole star, Thuban, because that is kind of in fossilized form, we have it there. And now when we will read Brihadaranyaka passage, we will see they make a kind of pair of lovers, perhaps. There is the idea that this the tiny star, who is regarded as the wife of seven sages, she is now actually, she is not in exact alignment with the seven sages. No? So she, it looks like she is moving towards Thuvan, towards this Brahman star. Okay. So this I have a little bit bigger. So here, just the tail of dolphin is there, and this is Thuvan, that is the older pole star, and then actually I couldn't find a depiction which has both this tail of dolphin as well as seven sages. Here also they are just naming Mizar. The other, the tiny star is called Alcor, that is not marked there. Anyway, so now I go to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There is one enigmatic passage which is intervening two halves of Gargya Ajatasatru discourse. I published one article in 2013 in IIJ describing certain things, reinterpreting the text, and telling that Brihadaranyaka 2.1 and 2.3, they actually make one discourse, and then at one point, for some reason, the one discourse was divided into two, and then they got somehow lost the track, and then they started to interpret the two sections independently, but the discourse becomes incomplete if we read only 2.1, because Gargya starts with his claim that he teaches Brahman, and then he proposes Purusha here and there as Brahman. Ajatasatru opposes, and finally the table is turned and Ajatasatru is teaching. But 2.1 ends with Ajatasatru teaching about Purusha made of consciousness or cognition in the heart, so only in human body. So he still has not taught about Brahman. And then actually the detail about Brahman is given in 2.3. So without 2.3, the discourse is incomplete. But the clinching point is in 3.10, where the text says, etasya purusasya rupam, and then actually it gives Maharajanam Basaha, Pandvavikam, Indragopaha, different symbolic things. And once I tell you, you can easily relate these things, like Maharajanam Basaha is a saffron jacket, saffron cloth. That is related to the sun. That was the first proposition of Gargya. And then second proposition was Purusha in the moon, and Pandvavika, the white fleece, that fits with the moon. And then there is some kind of like, he abbreviates the list. And then Indra Gopa, everybody interprets as insect, but it is not. There, Gargya had proposed Purusha in Vayu is Brahman, and then Ajatasatru had said, no, no, that is not Brahman, but that is Indra, or Indra's mighty army. No? And now Indra Gopa, as it is in Rig Veda, Indra Gopa actually means Indra's guard or Indra's power, no? Indra's might. So I relate this Indra Gopa with Vayu, the deer. So what is happening there is, once the table is turned, and then he has to synthesize. Ajatasatru, once earlier he had critically negated Gargya's positions. Now he has to combine and then give the total picture. Now when he says that Purusha is the subtle must core of Brahman, after he taught about abstract as well as non-abstract, immortal as well as mortal aspect of Brahman, finally he says Purusha is the rasa, not the essence of Brahman. And then he has to relate and then say that how it covers all the propositions. Then he says, Purushasya Rupam. No? So because of this Maharajanam Basa, it is called the sun. Because of Pandvavikam, symbolically, he is called Somo Rajan. Then it is called Vayu because of Indra's might, and so on. And the last item there is, like, there is the flame of fire, so that is related with fire. And then finally, there is this Sakrit Vidyutta, which I interpret, because it is not vidyut. Everybody was translating it as lightning, but it is not lightning. It is lightning like once and for all irradiation in the human body. So that is the form of Purusha in living body. So that is the last item. So that way I interpret that. And then I think I feel that it is convincing that these two sections make one discourse. And then now I had the problem, why is this thing is here? So 2.2 is intervening these two halves. Then from a different direction I was working on this dolphin idea. Then when I was reading this, after a long time, no? So actually I finalized that article in 2012. Now in 16 I am dealing with this one. So I realized that here, if we relate this passage with this Brahmopasthana, the veneration of Brahman, we can interpret the text better. And in Upanishads, in early times, in early periods, we cannot just be happy with philosophical interpretation of something. There can be also ritualistic, mythological interpretation. So it is kind of, in modern days we do, no? So we write our articles sometimes in box, we have something funny or interesting in a box. So it looks like this 2.2 is actually in a box. So the in two halves there is philosophical interpretation of Brahman. What is Brahman? How it is? Consists of the totality, the whole world it covers, and so on. And here, esoteric way or the kind of how you say. They are relating with their cosmogonic ideology, myth, and so on. So let me read here now. Yoha bai shishum sadhanam sapratyadhanam sasthunam sadamam veda saptah dvishato bhratribhyan avarunaddhi. Ayam bhava shishur yoyam madhyama pranah tasyedam eva adhanam idam pratyadhanam pranasthuna annam dama. Let me give credit to Brereton and also Bidzel. They have tried to interpret this text, but without involving dolphin, without involving Brahmopasthana. But already Brereton was clever enough, so he went to Hiranyakeshi Sutra, and somehow he said, because Brahman appears in a later passage, so somehow he was closer to the truth, but he could not interpret it completely, because he started with the idea that in later part there is this upside down bowl. He thought this is the whole sky. So that probably stopped him reaching to this idea. And then, but he seems he had not read these passages. Now I am reading the Brahmopasthana passages. Anyway, so who knows the dolphin? Now I'm in this kind of in a mystical way. They are using Shishu in different double meaning, or maybe even triple meaning. Who knows the dolphin, the celestial dolphin, together with its foundational position? This is my interpretation, because adhanam is can mean foundation or can be placement, but pratyadhanam is hapax. So one just appears here. So together with its foundational position and frontal position, in body it fits with foundational and frontal, and together with its hitching post and the rope. So this hitching post and rope actually makes me think of the dolphin and Hiranyakeshi passage and other things. He will undoubtedly hold off all hating rivals. I should say all seven hating rivals. But Sapta can stand for all. No? So sometimes can mean like Sapta Pranaha, that kind of thing is there, like kind of big number. It can be, but here we have Sapta, but maybe I should stick to seven, because that fits in the heavenly celestial picture. Still, this passage is enigmatic, no? So it is not easy to interpret. Then Ayam eva shishu yoyam madhyama prana. Now he interprets in a microcosmic level. No? So there is no macrocosmic interpretation. But generally we have both macrocosmic as well as microcosmic. So Brereton suggests that probably this shishu is the sun, this shishu is Agni. That is quite possible because the sun as well as Agni in some other Vedic passages, they are depicted as Shishu. That is also there. But in that case, if we interpret Shishu as the sun and or Agni, we have a problem with the rope and hitching post and so on. So I thought maybe in heavenly context, we have to interpret it as better as dolphin. So the dolphin is definitely this one here in the body, now in a microcosmic level, which stands as the central vital function, madhyama prana. Its foundational position is precisely this here, probably is pointing to the navel somewhere in the body, and its frontal position is precisely this here, again he points probably to the nose or mouth or head. You know? So anyway, in the body, he's interpreting that this is the central vital function which extends from, they believe that navel is the bottom and then top somewhere in Dvadasanta in later period, but earlier maybe nose or forehead and so on. Okay, anyway, there is another passage in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad itself which says that, which describes this upside down bowl. It says the bottom is up, mouth is downward, and then all kinds of glories placed there. And then the second part, second half says, the seven sages are there, they are in the border or at the rim of that bowl. And then, Bhagashtami Brahmana Samvidana. That is actually this, originally this verse comes from Atharva Veda. There is no idea of the earth, speech as the earth, but in this version we have the speech as the earth. And then I am interpreting this as back there, the earth, in the context of the seven sages. Seven sages are there, and the earth is the Alkor, who is later regarded, interpreted as Arundhati, maybe in early period regarded as Bats, as the wife of seven sages, or the companion of seven sages. Now she is in harmony with, you can say, Samvidana, or she is aligning with, or moving towards Brahman. That is the pole star. That is my interpretation of Bhagashtami Brahmana Samvidana. She is making alignment with Brahman. That is the pole star. Okay, I am running out of time. Let me just show you some very old images of actually more dolphin-like. So this comes from Allahabad Museum, and they are dating it to the 2nd century BC. Probably it comes from somewhere, Kaushambi, they are saying. And the same image from the other side. Again, you see this snout is broken. No? You can see somehow the bottom of that snout here. Then we have also this image coming from Museum of Fine Arts, Boston. Kumaraswamy in 1936, he published an article in their bulletin, but his title of his article is The Indian Crocodile. But he himself says the body doesn't look like a crocodile, but he cannot make leap and think about, he talks about, you know, like Shishumara, Chasa, Makara, these are somehow they overlap or they are related to each other, but still he can't come and say that it must be the river dolphin. But I would say this is a river dolphin, and there was tradition worshipping probably the dolphin itself. This one comes from probably from the top of a pillar, votive pillar in front of Pradyumna's temple. This I'm not sure it comes from a pillar or not. The bottom doesn't look like that way, flat. And this again, another one comes from Bidisha, Beshnagar. I should thank Peter Skilling for this image. And here is the sketch of Kumaraswamy. This looks already more like a fish. No? So there is transition from dolphin to fish. And here you can see the Ganges depicted. Here is a small snout curled, no? Behind. And here, this is again perhaps Ganges, there is a tail, and also here one of the Gana is holding the snout, no? And then standing on the mouth. And here also the Varuna and Varunani, here actually really long snout is there. So in early period, they had this idea that Jasa Makara was perhaps the dolphin. So, yeah. And by later times, you know, like this is 18th century or 19th century, I don't know, they have somehow this idea that it has snout, but the body, they depict it as a fish. But anyway, for Indians, already in Sushruta, many aquatic animals are put together as different kinds of fishes. So, many aquatic animals found in waters, they were regarded as matsya in a way. Even for crocodile, probably, maybe some of you know Hindi, magarmach. Now, magarmach is a word for crocodile. And there, if we re-Sanskritize it, magar is makara, and then mach is matsya. So they are saying that it is a crocodile kind of fish. So anything in water is fish for them. Okay, maybe I should stop there. Sorry for taking
your time. Thank you, Ramesh Diwakar. Yeah.